The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
One, two, three, four.
Josie and the Podcats.
Howdy there. My name is Maria Lewis and I'm the host of Josie and the Podcats, a six-part limited podcast series about the 2001 cult classic Josie and the Pussycats.
And golly, I'm producer Blake.
Every fucking time I open this show, you always have something to say, okay? I'll just cold open it next time. Fucking ungrateful prick. This is not the way I wanted to start our last episode.
This is exactly the way I wanted to start.
On with the show.
I am Blake Howard. Welcome to the very last bonus episode of Josie and the Podcats and the very last episode of our entire series.
That's
Josie
the
and
last,
the
last one. Like, for reals is
for
last.
For reals, yeah.
No Michael Myers bringing back up at the end of
back.
It. Yeah,
it's
double tap
back.
That shit.
It's been an incredible journey. It's been so epic and you've done such an amazing job. And
so
I know,
have you, buddy.
No, yeah.
Well, let's
whatever.
Hold hands.
No, I'm not going to touch you. But
probably wise. Hashtag ISO.
Hashtag ISO life. But you've done an incredible job and it's been an honor to sit across from you and watch you work. It's really, really special. And I know that I'm one of those newer fans to this fan base. And I think that anyone who loves this movie and loved it and built extremely dangerous, fire unsafe shrines in their house to this movie would be absolutely adoring this. And so I just want to say congrats because it's just awesome.
Oh, well, congrats to everybody who listened. No,
I don't know how to take praise.
I can't take compliments. I can't take praise. I struggle with those things.
We'll get back to the fucking script.
Oh my fucking God. You started this. Cut this shit out. Fucking.
It's staying in.
I hate you so much.
Oh, I love you.
No. All right. Yeah. So this is officially it though. Once this episode is over, we're metaphorically plowing into a Metallica concert, just like du jour.
Metaphorically, of course.
Of course. And so on our last major episode, the one just before this, we talked about the unlikely legacy Josie and the Pussycats ended up having after nearly 20 years of, you know, flopping kind of ungracefully at the box office in 2001. And even though that happened, it became a cult film and developed this frothy, enduring fan base. And because it had bombed during its original theatrical run, there had never really been a victory lap for the movie per se. Even the premiere in Los Angeles, which usually fills that role, wasn't the celebration it should have been.
Hey, Anthony Stewart Head was there in person, okay, with his daughters.
And Keith Sutherland was there wearing pussycat ears. Have some fucking respect.
Respect the neck.
But the reason it wasn't this big frothy celebration was because writers and directors Deb Kaplan and Harry Alfond, along with the Universal execs, had seen the stats. They knew how the movie was tracking and that wasn't well. So for a huge chunk of time, everyone involved with the project thought this movie had swung and missed, and that was that. The cult following was building and bubbling and frothing away, something they didn't fully begin to understand the extent of until social media became a proper tool. Someone who did know, however, was Moshafiq, record label manager at Mondo Records and one of Josie and the Pussycats' biggest fans.
A legend.
I had a sneaking suspicion that there was a pretty quiet fan base for the film. You know, it had been bubbling up on the surface, maybe not so much in Australia, maybe there it's a little bit more active of a scene, but here it's a true guilty pleasure. And you know, at my company, we traffic in cult classics, right? But the idea of the cult classic, at least here in the States, is a very gendered one. You know, you talk about your like sci-fi shoot 'em ups, you know, your like, you know, alien movies and horror slasher films, obscure 70s exploitation films.
So Mo, rage and Josie and the Pussycats fan that he is and lover of the soundtrack, led a push at Mondo to release the first ever vinyl pressing of the soundtrack. The reissue featured a 12-page booklet of never before seen behind the scenes photos, all new liner notes by Emma Garland from Noisy, fresh interviews with the creative team. And to celebrate this release, Mondo staged a massive live reunion of not just the cast of the film, not just the filmmakers, but the musical talent as well, including Letters to Cleo's Kay Hanley, woo, the late great Adam Schlesinger legend, from Fountains legend, of legend. Wayne, and more. With those innocent eyes and says it looks like you're wearing some kind of disguise because your hair sticks up, your shoes are untied. So on September 26, 2017, just over 16 years after the movie came out, Mondo and Alamo Drafthouse hosted this epic Josie and the Pussycats reunion at the Ace Hotel in Los Angeles that sold the fuck out.
At my company, I have a coworker who is 15 years older than me and a bit of a goth. And, you know, someone who specializes in the, you know, video nasties in the UK and all these things. And he happened to be in town for this event. And he, every step of the way, he was like, this is something that I have no concept of, right? Like he felt like 10 steps removed. When I checked in with him at the end of the night, he was like, people were crying when they were buying the record. And there was people who were like in costume and doing all those things. And it was just, that was the vibe, right? Like it was so high energy. Everyone was losing their minds. And then for me, I only got reports of it secondhand because I was just so in it. But I remember getting the download from everyone who was on the ground and they were all just sort of like, what the hell? Like how did no one know that this existed?
For folks like Kay Hanley, who'd had a lot of other shit going on in the intervening years, it was her first-hand experience of how beloved Josie and the Pussycats had become. Here's Kay.
Oh, boy. It was wild. I mean, I really did not know that the movie and the soundtrack had become so beloved that we would sell out the whatever that room was. I mean, just a huge theater and people singing along to every single word. It was nuts. And being with like Deb and Harry and I was really like, I thought it was going to be about the actors as it should be. I didn't know, you know, I sat on the panel kind of at the last minute or was invited to sit on the panel discussion at the last minute and was really like kind of, you know, really moved that people wanted to ask about that on top of asking, you know, Rachel and Tara and Rosario about their experiences. It was awesome.
People showed up to the theater in costume, dressed as Fiona, of course, because if you can dress up as anyone, dress up as Fiona, dressed as DuJour, dressed as the Cabots, dressed as Josie, Melanie, Valerie. The whole experience was quite simply mind-blowing for the writers and directors, Deborah Kaplan and Harry Elfont, not to mention star Rachel Lee Cook. Here they are.
I got really more excited watching Kay from the Wings start singing. When she started singing You Don't See Me and she cried while she was singing the song, I cried. I was like, this is so, it's so meaningful on so many levels. Because she never really went out there as the face of the music. And it's some of her best work, and she got no attention for it really until all this time later. And this whole crowd of people were singing every single note of the song with her. It was really, really lovely.
Yeah, it was super gratifying. Like, after all this time to have a... And they may have been the only 1,000 people, but it was amazing. Just that energy. People were so excited.
Counting the lines along with the movie. And
yeah. And we had never, that band had never played live.
Like going to a real, like early screening of Rocky Horror, like when people were really into it.
Yeah.
And we missed most of the screening, actually.
Yeah.
Because we were kind of just all buzzing downstairs after the concert.
We were all excited to see each other again.
Mo had a sneaky surprise in store for not just the audience, but for Harry, Deb, and particularly Rachel and Tara Reid as well.
That Rosario moment was one of the most wild experiences of my life.
Far as they knew, Rosario Dawson was in New York. She wasn't supposed to be in town, but she was. She landed at LAX secretly and headed straight to the event, arriving on stage to surprise not just the hundreds of folks in attendance, but Harry, Deb, Rachel, Tara, Missy Pyle, Gabrielle Mann, Kay, Adam, everyone else who was there as well. It was the first time all three of the Pussycats had been reunited since 2001.
Chills.
Oh, and Rosario showed up.
Yes.
With none of us knew that she was coming. You may have known. I did not know. I was shocked when she came out. And it was the first time the three of us had... all of us have been in the same room since the movie came out.
Yeah, or since we did Escort anyway.
So it was super, super fun.
I wish that I had been in the theater for longer, but Tara wanted to go to the bar, and she wanted me to meet the guy who she was dating that week. So I was there with them for a while. It was a bad choice.
And we had to sign all those albums. We had to sign all those albums. So Rosario's mom could take them.
So as a Josie fan who watched this event happening from across the other side of the world, absolutely frothing at the mouth, it was incredible to see Josie and the Pussycats as the number one trending topic in the world on the night of this reunion. For Mo, someone who had been as big a fan as any of us who've worked on this podcast or just listened to the show, it was a very special full circle moment.
I saw it at the Roosevelt Field shopping mall. In March of 2001, well, I actually have my concert ticket stub on my wall. Rachel was very kind enough to sign it at the event. Hold on one sec. Yeah, I saw it on April 11th, it seems, according to the ticket. And that's the most full circle thing about that entire thing. I went and saw a movie almost 20 years ago. And then at the time it was 16 years ago. But, you know, and then I showed up to an event that, you know, these people who probably hadn't really seen each other in nearly that long. Were standing in the same room, and I was able to show proof that I was there day one. It was bizarre. I don't remember what drew me to the film because I don't really particularly remember the trailers, and I don't particularly remember the marketing. I think I was just a person who went to the movies a lot, right? It was just like another thing. And I remember like the Scooby-Doo film had maybe come out around that period of time. I can't remember the order in which it happened, but I remember being like pleasantly surprised by Scooby-Doo. And I remember thinking, oh, well, you know, like they seem to get it, you know, like Josie and the Pussycats and Scooby-Doo, like that's pretty cool. Like that makes sense. Hanna-Barbera, those are things I grew up watching. You know, if it's anything like the Scooby-Doo movie, like I'll feel like this weird little hybrid of nostalgia, but also because the Scooby-Doo movie was definitely very much like, this ain't your, you know, your parents' Scooby-Doo, that sort of thing. I felt like I was part of a like, yeah, this is tailored to me, the MTV generation or whatever, you know? But I remember seeing it and walking out and just being like, that movie ruled. You know, like I had no idea that it was going to be that. You know, I didn't think that it was going to be this subversive, anti-consumerist, like, you know, sort of mass pop culture parody. Me and my friends, Tom and Kevin, I saw it for a second time later that same week, we're both just sort of like, damn, that movie rules. And then just went out about our ways and then realized very quickly that that movie was considered both poorly reviewed and a financial disappointment. And it kind of shocked us, quite frankly. I remember just thinking like, oh man, that's like such a shame. No one really talks about how great this movie is.
Well, now we're talking about it. Hal, we've been talking about it for 2 months, and after a full year's worth of work, research, interviews, traveling all over the world, transcribing interviews, hustling contacts, it has been an absolute joy getting to pour as much love and professionalism as we could into these 6 full episodes, 6 bonus episodes, and more than 40,000 words online where we have posted written versions of this and every episode.
Vastly more professionalism than we often do for anything else.
Much more professionalism than when we started this episode, our very last episode. We wanted to bookend it with just a fucking train wreck. So glad we got that for us. And I guess, you know, for the very last time, this episode of Josie and the Podcats was researched, written, and presented by me, Maria Lewis.
And produced by me, Blake Howard. Our podcast artwork was done by the talented Amy Reid, who you can find on Instagram at ai.me.me or via email at amy.reid0310@gmail.com. And our jerkin theme, the legend, Amanda Wilkinson, collabed with Edwin Organ. Amanda Wilkinson, of course, is from Operator Please and Bossy Love. And if you love her Bossy Love episode, her latest album, Me Plus You, is out now.
Thank you so much for listening to this and every episode. Thank you to all the journalists and websites and magazines who have given a shit about the show.
Thank you so much.
And written up some of the news that we've broken on here, plus interviewed us about why we care so much.
A huge thank you to all of our incredible guests who we called and spoke to at a whole stack of random hours internationally.
Fucking visited IRL, mate.
Visited in real life.
On boats.
Used
literally.
Used friends of friends. Like, you know, one of our dear friends, Kat Corbett, who's the narrator on Anchor and Vice, is friends with Kay Hanley. And Kay Hanley, we contacted Kay through there. And I don't think Kay would mind us sharing this, but she just goes, she sent Maria and I an email and said, "I hear you're looking for me."
I totally forgot about that. Is this tangent going?
It was one of my favorite moments of the whole thing, because it was like, we got Kay Hanley.
We got her.
Yes. Yeah.
It was
so
rad.
So wonderful.
I guess on that note, thanks so much to all the guests who are so generous with their time and who responded to emails and calls and heard we were doing this and reached out to us. And, you know, we're weird ass Aussies from the other side of the world. Yeah, so thanks a lot.
Thanks to some of our guests for inviting us to their shows.
Charlie
Bliss invited us to their show the night of our interview. It's just been incredible. And I know you just whatever with compliments, but it's been an honor to watch you work. This has been incredible. At the end of my, I would say fairy tale ending to the One Heat Minute production, One Heat Minute, I felt this sort of sense of transcendence, but no one was there watching me, and me watching you do this thing that's meant so much to you and like pour all of your talent and all of your sort of like all of the you that is now and all of your talented writing skills and interviewing skills and transcribing skills and production. It's been super impressive, and it's been really fun to produce across from you.
Until next time.
Until never again, because she can't take a compliment.
Who's a rock star?
Josie and the Podcats.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.